We all travel with different passions and different aspirations. And if you've got a hobby or a special interest, and if you can weave it into your trip, it just becomes a better trip. Right now, we're going to talk with our travelers, with our audience, with our listeners, and we're going to share ideas about hobbies and how special interests can sort of, you know, I like to say the word carbonate the experience. Our phone number is 877-333-7425. You can email us at radio@ricksteves.com. Let's talk about hobbies and special interests. Let's talk to Mark in Albany, California. Mark, thanks for your call.
Oh, thanks for taking my call, Rick. Thank you very much. I'm a big sports fan. I was a sports writer for about 25 years, and whenever I go to Europe or to any other country, I seek out sporting events. You know, whether it's a bullfight or a baseball game or even a good chess match, I look ahead of time to find a sporting event that I think would be fascinating to see. And I think it's paid off, as I've really enjoyed those types of endeavors internationally.
You know, I think that's one of the great oversights of among travelers, is not to realize that you don't need to be a fanatic about soccer to have a really entertaining experience going to a soccer match. Or you don't need to be really into greyhound racing to actually go to a greyhound race. There's so many sporting events, and they vary really dramatically from country to country, don't they?
Oh, and they do. And it's not only the sporting event, but it's the people. It's the arenas are different.
The snacks.
Even the concessions.
Yeah.
I remember being in Japan at a baseball game, sitting up in the nosebleed seats, and this tiny concessionaire had a keg on her back. It probably weighed 35 pounds, and she's like a mountain goat, and she's pouring beers for people. And it's like, that's something you don't see in the U.S.
No. Wow. Every culture has these. And, you know, I would propose going to sports that you don't know the rules to, just for something entirely
that's
different. And most people in the stands would love to be your mentor to better appreciate hurling in Ireland or that wonderful high-lie sport in Basque country and so on.
Oh, I totally agree. And you could even take it one step further. And if you're like myself, I'm an avid sports memorabilia collector, and you can take it to like the sales of the markets, and you can find in Europe and beyond all sorts of fun stuff like Olympic stamps and tickets and credentials and soccer cards. And it's just there's so much out there for the sports fan or just someone who's interested.
Yeah,
take advantage.
What about touring stadiums? I know that's a big deal for a lot of soccer people. I mean, a lot of people will, it's almost like a religious pilgrimage to go to some, you know, revered stadium for soccer.
I completely agree that going to the stadiums that have held the World Cups or just the ones that have been around for 100 years or more to see a match there, much like people do in the U.S., making a tour around the country. Probably bullfight arenas are the same way, or even golf courses. It's hitting the major golf courses that hold the British Open.
Yeah,
has got to be on high in people's lists.
And bars. I mean, you go to a bullfight bar in Spain, and it's almost as graphic as going to the bullfight itself.
I was going to bring that up. The sports bars that are near the stadiums, they're just as fanatic. I was fortunate enough to be in Japan when Ichiro was playing his last major league game, and it was held at the Tokyo Dome. And it was just nuts around the stadium and in the bars. It was a spectacle. It was wonderful to be there.
You know, Mark, one thing I would mention to people is don't insist on going to the big stadiums for the major leagues of whatever sport we're talking about. I find very charming the little small town versions. I mean, you can go to a small town bullfight, and it's just a simple little tiny, almost like it's sort of an inflatable swimming pool as opposed to a serious swimming pool, the bull arena. You know, there's little stadiums for soccer. I've been to, you know, a big soccer game. Sometimes it's expensive and overwhelming with the crowds and hard to get a ticket. But there's small towns that have soccer matches, and it's for real, just like going to a minor league baseball game here.
I was going to say that in countries like the Netherlands or Australia or in Italy, they have their own versions of baseball, and it may be sort of like club level or
right,
like low college. but it's just as exciting, just as interactive, and I think it'd be a thrill for a sports fan to attend.
Mark from Albany, California, thanks so much for reminding us that we have that whole different dimension of checking in with the culture in our travels, and that would be becoming a sport enthusiast for whatever sport you don't know anything about.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Take care. Happy travels. Becca's calling in from Arlington in Virginia. Hey, Becca.
Hey, Rick.
Thanks for calling. What do you have in mind?
So I'm a foodie. I love to bake, and I also love to eat. And so I knew about a couple of years ago that got really popular, this pastry called Queen Amand. It's not spelled that way, but it's a good French or Brittany word, Breton word. Anyway, I decided to go and find the place where it was invented, which is in Douarnenez in Brittany in western France. And then I made a whole trip out of it and explored Brittany and just had a great adventure, all just to find out where a pastry got started.
Whoa. So now this is Queen Amand, and it's
exactly.
Made in a town called Douarnenez in Brittany. So hard to pronounce words, but probably not hard to enjoy to taste this delicious pastry. Just what is the pastry?
So it's kind of like a round version of a croissant. It's probably the same batter, but a little bit more butter.
Okay.
So when it bakes, it crystallizes into a really nice crispy crust on the outside, and then the inside is nice flaky dough, just like a croissant.
So how'd you know about this?
Well, because it started showing up all of a sudden in a bunch of restaurants in the U.S., I decided to Google it to find out what it was, because it also had this weird name, Queen Amand, and so found out that it had happened actually, this baker in Douarnenez about 100 years ago maybe, he ran out of pastry and he just had some croissant dough and a bunch of butter, so he threw it together in the oven really quickly, and when it came out, people loved it, and then somehow finally made it way to the U.S. to a bunch of restaurants. And so I just got curious about it. And now, actually, the Brittany website, there's a Brittany tourism website that tells you the best places to go and get this.
Oh,
try
nice.
This place. So I tried several of them when I was there. And, of course, they were all delicious, and it was fun to, taste the different ones and compare.
What was it like the first time you found a great Queen Amand in Europe, in Brittany?
Well, it was really fun just because I thought, wow, this is the original one. This is where it originally came from. And, they even had the place where the man actually made it isn't there anymore. But in this little tiny town of Douarnenez, there was a little town square kind of, that had a mural that had the old building, a painting of where he was and how it was invented. So in that area, they're very aware that it's become famous. Although I went to the tour office in that town, and they didn't realize it had made it all the way to the U.S., so they were very happy to hear that we were eating it in the U.S. as well.
Oh, my goodness. That was a good excuse to get over there to Brittany. How was the rest of your travel experience, apart from just doing nothing but eating Queen Amand pastries?
Right. Brittany was just a huge surprise to me. The people were lovely. I didn't realize the Celtic connection. I'm embarrassed. I didn't know enough about history to realize it. So while I was there, I stumbled on an international Celtic festival held in a town called Lorient, which is very close to Douarnenez. So after spending the morning having pastries, I went to the festival afterwards, and I would never have discovered it, right, if I hadn't been out there after the pastry.
So this is a Celtic festival, and, the Celtic cultures that we probably think of more would be Ireland and Scotland. What was a Celtic festival like in France? How did it feel Irish?
Well, actually, it really did. The music was very Irish-oriented, similar. Lots of people were in kilts. They were drinking Guinness. They had lots of different exhibitions up of different Celtic artwork, Celtic artisans making artwork, lots of musicians playing, and just a really very Irish feeling in the middle of Brittany. It was amazing.
Do you know about that term, the Celtic crescent?
No, I didn't know that.
If you think about England, it is surrounded by a crescent, demographically, of Celtic societies. You got Scotland, you got Ireland, you got Galicia in northern Spain, and you've got Brittany in France. And they all have that in common, the bagpipes, the kilts, the what you think of as Celtic in Ireland or Scotland, it'd be the same in Spain and France in those Celtic societies.
That's makes perfect sense, but I had not thought it. But I love that image of the crescent.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it matches what I discovered there.
It does. And it's just like, from a music point of view, in Spain, it's like river dance meets flamenco, you know. It's got that wonderful mix.
Great, yes.
I was just thinking, as I was here listening to you talk, there's so many times when you travel to a certain place because there's something that you really like that originates there. I mean, I love a salad niçoise, and I love to go to Nice and have a Nice salad.
Right.
You know, I love the insalata caprese, you know, the Capri salad, and that's, you know, from the island of Capri in that area. If you're going to have a Campari cocktail, you might as well go to the original Campari bar in Milan at the Gallery Victor Emmanuel. So in our travels, we do a little homework, and if you find something that's near and dear to your heart from a taste treat point of view, you can do what Becca from Arlington, Virginia has done. You can look it up and you can go visit it. And apparently, Becca, it was worth the trouble.
Totally, yes.
Nice. Becca, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Bye now. What are your passions that have provided a good theme for your travel adventures? We're hearing about it from listeners like you at 877-333-RICK. Or email us at radio@ricksteves.com if you have a compelling travel tale to share that we might use on a future open phone segment on Travel with Rick Steves. Jill from Stillwater, Oklahoma used that address and sent us this report. I never pass up a library or a bookshop, and in my previous life as a library professor, I designed and carried out study abroad for graduate library students. We visited the British Library, Cambridge Library, Oxford Library, and the School Library for the City of London. Wow, all in England. And then also in Ireland, the National Library and Trinity College Library in Dublin. I looked for specialty tours specific to famous libraries and bookstores, but could find none, so I created my own. The process was long, but I met lots of nice library folks, learned a lot, and actually enjoyed the process. Boy, that's a good story from Jill in Stillwater, Oklahoma. You know, did a lot of work, met a lot of nice people, learned a lot, and enjoyed the process. You can really have a lot of fun going to these amazing historic libraries. I once gave a talk to a group of librarians, and I wanted to show clips that I've filmed over the years from the libraries. And I went to our website, ricksteves.com, and I went into the Classroom Europe program, and I just typed in library. And I got clips from 5 different historic libraries, several of them that Jill has mentioned, and it cobbled together into a 20-minute little TV shows featuring libraries. And it reminded me there are a lot of beautiful and historic and inspirational libraries that are open to the public. And if we know where they are, they can make our trip much more interesting. Thanks, Jill, for the tip. And Justin's on the line from Bellevue in Washington State. Hey, Justin.
Hi, Rick.
Thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So have you tied in your hobbies or your interests with your travels?
Well, last year, me and a group of my college buddies utilized our enjoyment of whiskey and golf and went to Scotland.
Yeah.
And we made it all the way up to Inverness, played some of the windiest golf of my life, coming off the North Sea there in up north. And we all together rented a car and all took turns as designated drivers, popping around different golf courses and learning about different whiskeys at different distilleries along the way.
Wow. What a cool theme. I mean, a bunch of guys in a van and golf and whiskey.
Yes, yes, we are. And we're very responsible. Everybody took their turn and would be dry one day.
Because they've got zero tolerance on the road in most of Europe.
Yeah, we made sure that we were following the rules as best we could.
Well, that's good, as long as one of you is.
Yes, it was great. You know, we were able to really experience a lot of things. We went to a number of distilleries, but along the way, you know, we came across some of the incredible architectural achievements in Scotland, you know, from ancient stone circles to like Crossmorag, the Antonian Wall for stone walls from Roman times, you know, Dunatar Castle for kind of medieval times and for modern times, the impressive Falkirk Wheel.
Isn't that interesting? As you went through those different sites, I've seen most of them, and it is fascinating how you've got from different ages, and we're talking from prehistory to ancient Rome to the industrial age in the 19th century, all of these different slices of local history. And if you know where they are, you can let that, you know, make your trip even more rewarding.
Yeah, it's really great. And just being able to see those things and have great experiences like walking the Old Course, St. Andrews on a wet Sunday afternoon.
So what's that like? Justin, this is interesting because I'm not a golfer, but people who go to St. Andrews, it's like a pilgrimage. What's it like going to that first course for an avid golfer?
Well, it's really incredible because the course is really flat. When you go and see all the golf on TV and you go to the golf across different places in the U.S., all these funky angles and stuff, but it's just a really big open field with a bunch of holes in it for the bunkers that some of them had ladders. They were so deep.
Huh. And then you went to a series of distilleries. I would imagine you went to Speyside along the Spey River.
Yeah, we actually stayed in Speyside, and that was a really neat experience. One day we were driving around looking for some place to eat, and we stopped in the little city of Craig Alicky. Uh-huh. And went to their hotel and was really impressed by their whiskey selection at the bar that they had there as we were waiting to get our haggis meal. And then the bartender said, "Hey, do you want to go to the whiskey room?" And we thought we were in the whiskey room.
Whoa. Did you have to make reservations to the distilleries, or did you just drop in?
Well, we made one reservation, and we should have done a lot more because we tried to go to a number of the distilleries, and they just wouldn't accept us without a reservation.
Yeah, that's my experience in updating that part of our book, was just you got to get reservations unless you don't, if you want to not be disappointed. Also, one of the highlights for me was the cooperage on Speyside. Did you happen to visit the place that makes the barrels?
Yes, that was extremely impressive. Watching how they did it, understanding the history, and, you know, I just said it earlier, but the history of it and how just making those barrels really affected society and being able to have that transcontinental migration simply because of the way that the barrels were made without access to or touching of any metal. It just kept all the water fresh and whatever you've stored in it fresh.
From an age before plastic and before modern casks and so on, it was just really a... If you ever know a person named Cooper, you know that's there's a person whose family once made those precious barrels. I was so impressed by how frantic the workers were. Did you notice how fast they were working?
Yes, and it's funny because I think that came from the history where the Coopers would get paid by the barrel. So
that's it.
The more barrels you made, the more you got paid.
Piecework, man. That's if you want people to work like a little hamster in a wheel. Pay them by the piece, and they're all getting paid piecework, and boy, they were just working like crazy. So many cool things to see when you have a theme in your travels. And Justin, your theme, whiskey and golf. What a great idea with some good buddies heading over to Scotland. Thanks so much for your call.
Thanks for your time, Rick.
Okay, take care. Happy travels, happy golfing.
Bye.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Casmara Hall and Donna Bardsley at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington. Andrew Wakeling and Sherry Court upload the shows to our website. Sheila Gerzoff handles affiliate promotions. Our theme music is by Jerry Frank. You can find links to our guests and search the show archives at ricksteves.com/radio. We'll see you next week with more Travel with Rick Steves.